From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
All right, we're going to do a show here, folks. This is The Media Project, so you're going to be able to hear it also because you're tuned in here. So this is a welcome to The Media Project.
Don't touch
Project.
That dial.
Don't touch that. That's right. You
keep
never
it,
know what she'll
or as
do.
The news ladies say, keep it here.
Keep it here. Keep it here. That's Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. He wants you to always keep it here and donate some money while you're at it. Stu Shinsky is here, the executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Gentlemen, a pleasure. How you doing, guys? And people out in radio land, you should be honored this morning. You cannot see into the studio because if you're not wearing sunglasses, Dr. Chartok's suit jacket is a
multicolored,
wonderful example of 1971.
It's gorgeous. It's quite something. Lovely, indeed.
Right. I'd like to ask a question because you guys are my senior advisors.
And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Thank you for allowing me to introduce myself. Go right ahead, gentlemen. What?
Don't forget
I'm just a minor player here.
Don't forget, I've made you everything you are. Okay. So let's start here.
Okay.
Can I be tall and good looking too?
I really, yeah. You are tall and good looking, only he has a little bit more hair.
That's a lot more hair.
Okay. So, bald people, hold your letters. I want to ask your advice. Every once in a while, a news organization, you know, has a stake. You know, they may move their building from inner Albany to out to Colony, or...
Who would have done that?
Maybe.
The Times Union in 1969 did so, yes.
Yeah, okay. And so, you know, I have a particular gripe, and I need to know what to do with it, because the anger is, you know, around my head. And it's a media topic, because at what point does a media organization fill its own hand? I'm thinking about the ethics of this, by complaining. So, for example, WAMCU wouldn't know this, folks, if you were down in Oshkosh or another place that maybe you're playing the program. But WAMC has taken a rather challenged area of Albany and done what it could to make it better. We put up our Linda Norris Auditorium. We have two buildings down here that we've rehabilitated, done wonderful work with. And the city of Albany has come along and has decided, again, with the governors and the mayors who always do it, that they want to get more people into downtown Albany.
A few blocks further from here. Yep, about a mile further down the road from where you are.
But downtown Albany, they every so and often we're treated to, we're going to build housing down here. We're going to get more people out on the streets at night. All commendable, right? I mean, that's all good. But every governor wants to do it, and every mayor has wanted to do it. And yet there are neighborhoods, and the question is, are you going to do for the neighborhoods what you're doing again for downtown Albany? They come up with a plan for $65 million to build the rebuild the wonderful Palace Theater, a great institution in Albany. And your reporter, Rex, did a wonderful job, Steve Barnes, of asking the question, where's the money coming from? Well, the reason I'm a little ticked off here is that a year or two ago, the city of Albany, which has cultural money, and which towards our $7 million budget, gives us $5,000. Just a symbolic little toss to say, we really love having you here, and you've done wonderful work. And they took the $5,000 away, said, we don't have enough money. Now they're coming up with $65 million.
Who is?
We don't know.
No, I think the $65 million is a wish and a prayer. I don't think anybody has $65 million, and I don't know that your $5,000, you know, it's obviously not a drop in the bucket for a $65 million project, right?
Well, no. All I'm saying is it's nice to know that they're behind the public radio station that goes to 29 outlets where Albany is the home base. And I'm concerned that by my yelling about it, that somehow I'm going over the line and feathering our own nest, although I'm pretty ticked off about the whole thing. So I come to you two senior men, even though I'm much older than both of you, to ask your advice on how to handle this.
Well, you've just done the right thing by explaining your bias, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying that you don't like the idea of, well, no, you didn't say you don't like the idea of rebuilding the palace. You're just jealous of the notion that money might be going to a different part of Albany that is not coming to the part of Albany where you have established your enterprise, because you think that your enterprise would flourish more, I suppose, if it were in a neighborhood that had been rebuilt.
No,
like
on the contrary, because I don't expect them to come in and rebuild the neighborhood, Rex. And I really do, at the very highest level, resent your word jealous. Because it isn't jealous, it's fair. That's the question, whether it's fair. I am not jealous. I just think it's wrong of a city and a state. Now, look, I criticize the governor.
So here's the journalism point. You have to just make sure that your coverage... Right. has nothing to do with your point of view.
Absolutely.
You are not allowed to have anything to do with the coverage of this. You have to keep your hands off and stay out of that newsroom when they cover this thing, right?
Exactly. And as a business person in Albany or Poughkeepsie or Kingston or wherever, you have a right to speak to an issue through the same channels as everyone else, contacting City Hall, the planning board, wherever. The difference is that you have the microphones. You might have a printing press. And that's where the public can say, oh, well, you have an unfair advantage because you can editorialize, you can devote airspace, you can devote time. So I think the issue here is, as Rex notes, follow the channels that anyone else would channel to register your concern.
Yeah.
And then cover it as a news story.
How about editorializing
but,
in your
but
paper?
Contextually with other businesses as well, not just woe is us. Editorially, there might be editorial comment as well, but I think most people would be more concerned about the larger issue of downtown development instead of WAMC or Northeast Public Radio getting the short end of the stick.
Right.
Yeah, and you would want to give a fair hearing. You'd want to give time on the radio to people who support this.
I'd love to have the mayor come in and explain herself. Sure.
Yeah. Right. Well, if you think that the mayor is wrong in supporting expansion of the Palace Theater, and you've just said that, basically.
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
No. What I really resented was the taking away of the $5,000 by the cultural people. I think it's great that they're rebuilding the theater.
But you're attacking the $65 million project because you lost $5,000.
No, I'm not attacking it. I'm saying it's very strange. And when you're a very good reporter, ask the question of where's this money coming from, there was no answer.
No, they don't have any money yet. It's just a plan that's just been laid
out. But sitting there was the city people and the state people, which somehow got invited to be there. So the presumption is if they're sitting there, somehow they're coming up with the money. Isn't that right?
No, I don't think that's true, that they're necessarily going to be able to do it. I think they're saying here's a plan. I suspect that if you came out with a plan, a multi-million dollar plan to improve this community here, and you put all the work into it that has gone into this thing. I mean, they've got, you know, a thick packet of information and drawings and everything. The mayor would come to you, too, and go to your press conference and say, look at this wonderful plan to improve WAMC. Even if the money wasn't in hand, she would probably stand here and say, this is a great idea.
And I say, Mr. Rex Smith, just because you're handsome and tall, that doesn't give you the right to look down your nose at anybody. I say that you're wrong, that, in fact, there is pledged money, and they wouldn't have gone forward without it. And I'll bet you like $5 that sooner or later we're going to see where that money is and has come from. Don't you see?
Well, I hope you're right.
And your reporter tried very hard to find out. But no, on the record, I'm all for rebuilding the Palace Theater. I just think what you don't do is rob Peter to pay Paul.
Is it the same buckets of money?
Same buckets. So why would you be in favor of the palace and not be in favor of, I'm making this up, rebuilding something in Cohoes, for example? That's also a bucket of money, state money. I mean, how much money do you want if you don't get your $5,000? I'm just a little bit confused, really, but I don't get the link between the $5,000.
You're hopelessly confused.
Anyway, so now we know you're biased. No, but you're not. You're not against the project. So I don't get it.
No, I'm not
against
the project.
It sounds like it's what about us is what I'm hearing.
Right. What about us? Hey, how about me?
Well,
how about me? I want mine too.
And I wanted to compliment you and your newspaper for their coverage.
Thank you. Very kind.
The excellent report from your reporter who really did point out that this is without our knowing what is really going
on. Well, there's an advantage in this case to a reporter who really knows the community. Steve has been writing about downtown Albany issues for many years about development here. He's been writing about the arts. He's our senior arts writer. And so, you know, when you have good fortune to have long-tenured journalists with real specialties, you can get some expertise there.
So I hope you'll pass my compliment on to him.
I will tell him indeed. I will tell him that Dr. Chartok...
Listen to this week's media project.
The wonderfully attired Dr. Chartok, he, clothes horse that he is, with his cap and his... What do you call it? Madras jacket. That's it. The Madras jacket.
Multicolored. Mm-hmm.
That's
I can think of other adjectives.
Yeah.
Circus-like.
All right. So who here, please raise your hand, has covered Pokemon Go?
I got my hand up.
So the media is obsessed with Pokemon Go, some would say. Yeah, too much, really. I mean, I have now had people complaining about it, but the fact of the matter is...
It's all a buzz.
It's quite the buzz, and so you have to cover the buzz. Now it's a reality-based gaming platform, right? So,
driven by your mobile phone, where it uses GPS technology to sort of you chase these critters down, and you might have to drive over an entire region to get there.
How do you know which critter to chase down? I don't get that.
I'm not real familiar with it, but I believe it sort of gives you that target to go after.
Yeah, it appears. You download the app onto the game, and then it you follow the game, and you go to where you can find the thing. And it may
what thing?
The Pokemon.
The little character. Creature. Yeah. The creature.
You guys don't know what the hell you're talking about. That's clear.
It's
I'm very good with Monopoly.
Huge, yeah. So there's been criticism that, you know, we put these stories into the paper about such frivolous topics as Pokemon Go when we have, after all, racism and homicide and presidential campaigns.
And you talk about all of that, too.
We do. Yeah, thank you.
This is not supplanting coverage of the tragedy in Dallas. I mean, you know, geez, imagine this. The media is actually... with a trend, covering it as it happens instead of after the fact. How about that? We're with a trend.
And yet when I ask you guys to explain it, you really can't.
Well, we did pretty well.
I've never personally played it, so I don't have the... This was, you know, for a gentleman of my far, far advanced age, this was...
You don't even know what advanced age is like.
Listen here, Shunny.
A letter from our listeners, Alan Chartok, Stu Shinsky, and Rex Smith here on The Media Project, and you can write to us. And here is Maxine, who does write to us and says, "You speak frequently about media bias. I believe all media are biased. What I would like is for them to be very clear what their biases are so that I know them." And here is her point. She said, "Recently I heard a statement about journalists that said most journalists are not biased for the left or for the right, but for conflict. I believe this to be true." And she gives us an example of a congressional race and something that she heard here on WAMC. And she says, she concludes, that when a medium is biased for conflict, it no longer serves the needs of an informed democracy. Thank you, Maxine. Gentlemen, discuss.
BS. I'm going to tell you BS.
I second that.
Because, in fact, you're talking about a congressional race, and both candidates are putting up ideas. For example, the other day we had the wonderfully named Zephyr Teachout on, and she was very clear about the difference between herself and John Faso, her opponent. And she said John Faso has been a lobbyist and a legislative leader. I've written a book on corruption, I believe she said that, and I'm doing all of that. And because of the idea that you have two people running against each other, this stuff gets put on the table. Now, of course, we're going to have John Faso on to give his side to the way things go. And I think conflict is good.
You know, what I take from this is a very narrow vision. Because, yes, there is certainly the data that show that bad, quote-unquote bad and tragic news stories, they get highly read. But I will take you to an example within that, and that's from the Dallas Morning News, which after that horrible tragedy of the shooting of the police officers in Dallas, the front page the next day showed an eye, a human eye, an artist's version of a human eye, that was tearing, showing the pain that that city was undergoing. And the headline said, "Where to Begin?" And it was talking about how Dallas needs to redefine what sort of city it wants to be and should be. And I thought this was a great example of a newspaper thinking broadly to be a leader, to not take that conflict and run down the road with it and say, they really tried to heal this city.
Excellent. That's a really great example. And what do you think about front page editorials? You think that's okay?
I like them on a good basis when it's merited, not over the top, not very frequent. It's got to hit the target at the right time, at the right moment. And we have seen more and more front page editorials recently. I thought this was outstanding.
The New York Times did it recently for the first time since the 1920s.
Yes.
You know, there was the San Francisco Chronicle last week concluded a media consortium report on homelessness in San Francisco, which is a huge problem in the Bay Area, you know. And the Chronicle's executive editor, Audrey Cooper, decided that she was going to get all the journalists together to report on this. And 70 different news organizations in the Bay Area all devoted a week of coverage to homelessness, concluding with the Chronicle devoting its entire front page to an editorial saying, to your point, here's where to begin. This is constructive, issue-oriented, solutions-directed journalism. And I agree with you. I think that there's an important point.
Now, Rexy, I happen to believe that the letter writer is correct, that if we can, we should identify what we're going to do so that when people are reading you or listening to you, they know who you are. I, for example, said very early in this game, I said, I'm going to vote for Bernie Sanders. And I said, I know there'll be raised eyebrows, but I think every journalist should, because it is a very important thing to identify what your biases are, because you have them whether you deny it or not.
I don't think that's what she was writing about at all.
No, not today.
And I appreciate your point of view. And you know, we've had this conversation many times. And I would just say that who you're going to vote for is but one little thing. And if you want to give a list of all your biases, you would take up the entire underwriting time of the station to give
all
of your biases.
You're certainly right about that.
And so if you're going to have every journalist saying, here's how I feel about importing fruit from dominated countries, you know, so therefore I don't eat bananas. You know, that would be sort of absurd. Yes?
I'm known in my news is a very big New York Mets fan. And if the Yankees story is on page three, I will have people come in and say, well, clearly that's because you like the Mets. And so if you want to get into the transparency of everything, it's a huge check.
But I want to speak in support of Maxine's letter, by the way. I do think that we're biased in favor of conflict. You know, I think your point actually about Zephyr Teachout underscores the fact that what we look for, the golden quotes that you look for, are those where you can actually see the conflict, as opposed to the real structural policy issues that people talk about. But it's not just because we're evil. It's because that's what people pay attention to.
Now, I think I just heard something from you, which I think is very revealing.
Mm-hmm.
You said, it's not just because we're evil.
We are evil.
I just want to make that clear. But, Rexy, I take, of course, great exception to your filibuster, in which you say that it would take too much time to identify what our favorite fruits are. I don't think that's the issue here. Seriously, I think journalists do have, when they're covering certain things, when they're talking about certain things, they have attitudes, they have beliefs, and I think it would be honest and good for them to identify them. It is not necessary to tell you, for example, that I like Washington State cherries more than I like...
No. And you're different because you're a commentator.
That's
you're not
true.
A reporter.
Right.
You never do a straight story. And so,
right.
You know, it's easy for people to say, by golly, Shartok's right. But the fact is, we have practices and traditions and policies in newsrooms.
And layers.
And layers of checking to try to weed bias out of our coverage. And people do have biases, but our coverage, when it is well done, is kept straight. And that's why you don't have to have a whole long list of things saying, reporter Joe Blow here is an enrolled Republican, but however, he voted for Barack Obama in 2012, but not 2008. You know, that's absurd, Alan, and you can't do that. And so while your simplistic point may draw some huzzas from people on the sidelines, did I say I meant your clear delineation
point.
Of things? Did I must have used the wrong adjective.
You're such a condescending human being. It's the worst
I'm
part.
Sitting in the middle. I'll keep them apart. Don't worry. It does get into a larger issue, which is, okay, well, you know, I mean, you will hear the media, the big glob that is the media, we're all liberal this and liberal that, and if you put 30 of them in a room, they're going to all have the same viewpoint deep down within. So is that fact-based checking going to be as effective as it could be if all the thinking processes are the same? Well, I would venture to say that that's the diversity that's so important in newsrooms, from age to gender to background to economics to upbringing to sociology. We're not as homogenous as some might think. And I can tell you, being in newsrooms for as long as I've been in newsrooms, several decades, I've never seen anybody purposefully inject a viewpoint into a news story because it reflected their own bias. I've never seen it. Maybe it's happened. Maybe it's unconsciously done. I've never personally seen it as a thing to do.
Well, I've seen it, and I've certainly seen it in the New York tabloids, which do it a lot.
Different example. I'm at a community newspaper.
Yeah, yes, but they sell several million, you know,
that's
papers.
That's their mission.
In their dreams, they do. They only sell a few hundred thousand now. But.
Okay. But you're right about one thing, and that is the media is made up of a lot of different institutions. I read, for example, in one of the tabs this morning that when they were considering who was going to be Donald Trump's vice presidential nominee, the Jared Kushner, who was the son-in-law of Trump, said it's never going to be Chris Christie. And then it was added in this thing that Chris Christie prosecuted Kushner's father and put him in jail. And that's why he would never be.
That's relevant reporting. That is a piece of relevant information that was really good reporting to put in there to help explain the quote.
Right. Mm-hmm. Chris Christie was the U.S. attorney in New Jersey before becoming governor.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So that's actually, and I hadn't seen that anywhere else. So good job, I think, by the tabloid there. You know, there's a new Harvard study that has just taken a look at the presidential campaign coverage so far this year. And the point that comes out of it, the sort of overarching point, is that, as we've said for many years, the primary coverage has been dominated by horse race journalism. Who's ahead and who's not ahead? Mm-hmm. To the detriment of the effort to understand policy positions on the part of the candidates.
Well, we know what Donald Trump's policy positions are. He certainly talks about a wall between us and Mexico, right? And he certainly talks about gay rights.
Well, he's actually harder than most of them because pinning him down, you know, he goes back and forth on policies all the time. I mean, he's been on both sides of an awful lot of issues, and that's good journalism to point out.
And that has been pointed out repeatedly. You know, the one thing that, you know, I disagreed with this study. I really did because...
Yeah. It's pompous and condescending, just like Rex.
Because
I wasn't going to go that far. But.
Because it's from Harvard, right?
Well, Dr. no, Bernard? Because, you know, yes. it's, you know, there are, you know, how many media organizations out there? And they looked at eight. Okay. They looked at the biggest. They looked at NBC, USA Today, which, you know, Transparency, part of my company, Gannett, The Wall Street Journal, New York Times, LA Times, NBC, Washington Post. You know, they didn't look at mid-sized newspapers. They didn't look at mid-sized TV stations. They didn't look at weeklies. They didn't look at issues dominating. But I think the thing here that is so simple that was missed was that I think Trump was, frankly, one of the, quote, better news stories, not because of who he is or what he says, but because he came from nowhere.
And also...
17 candidates he emerged from.
And also...
Just a great story to watch.
People want it.
Yes.
You guys are, you're just like automobile hucksters. You guys, you sit in your newsroom and you decide what people want and you give it to them. For God's sakes, can't we understand that?
Well, I think that is, unfortunately, to use your word, condescending.
But
it's,
true.
It's not true. It's partly,
you don't?
It's partly true and you don't? And doesn't everybody, as your mom would say, right?
And don't you?
And don't you?
And so don't I?
And so don't you. There is some of that.
Again, I'm in the middle, folks. It'll be okay.
So, no, the pure public radio never pays any attention to audience and therefore just does what's right and good and never cares.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they're just boring, particularly NPR.
This is true of my newspaper as well. You know, we don't entirely do just what people want. If we did, you know, we would have, could be.
Yes. And by some of the calls that I get, and I'm sure Rex and even Alan, you take these calls of stuff people don't like, don't appreciate, don't want. So we can't be pleasing everybody despite our best efforts.
Yeah, right. Despite our efforts to imagine that, serve what the customers want,
yes.
Which is what we are often encouraged to do.
And some important news is not necessarily good news considered by someone, but it's important, valuable information that needs to be revealed.
There you go. Well, I think that that's just...
Oh, no. Don't say it's over.
I think that's a good enough piece
this
to
should,
end on.
Come on, yeah. Rex. The reason this is not an hour is because you don't want it, right?
No, I think it's because the listeners don't want it, and you're just catering to what people want here in WAMC rather than what they really need.
You can view Alan's suit jacket with a donation to the WAMC lockbox, WAMC.org, and Alan will show you his jacket.
Share your thoughts, media@WAMC.org. That's how you communicate with us. Stu Shinsky, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Pleasure to be here, gentlemen.
Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public
Not
Radio.
Not such a pleasure.
Professor Emeritus, he is, and I'm Rick Smith, editor of the Times Union. We thank you for joining us this week once again on The Media Project.
That's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers of such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.